May it please the court, I'm Thomas Kimmel. I represent the defendant appellant. My registration number is 9043. We're here today to request that the Court of Appeals reverse the decision of the Denver District Court. And in particular, we're seeking reversal on two grounds. The first one is that the District Court committed error in failing to dismiss or stay the relevant portions of the judicial proceeding pending completion of the administrative proceeding before the Bureau of Land Management. The second grounds we're seeking reversal is that under the factual circumstances of this case, the Denver District Court lacked subject matter jurisdiction to determine the validity of the lease and the unit well in question. Now, reversal on both of these grounds, we contend, is compelled because of one key fact in this case. That key fact is that in 1982, upon formation of the Mary Aiken Federal Oil and Gas Unit, the private fee owner, John Aiken, upon whose rights the plaintiff's rights in turn emanate, expressly committed the lease in which my client claims an interest and his lands to the Federal Oil and Gas Unit, known as the Mary Aiken Unit. And that commitment had two effects. One, in executing the commitment, Mr. Aiken agreed that the exclusive procedure to determine the validity of the leases that were being committed and the lands that were committed would be through the Bureau of Land Management. That administrative agency would be the procedural forum under which any future decisions relating to the lease and the lands were to be made. And the second part of that joinder was that Mr. Aiken agreed that the substantive law that would govern those determinations would now be the Mineral Leasing Act and the regulations enacted by the Bureau of Land Management.
When you're saying he expressly committed it, was that in the unit agreement, in the lease, in both?
You'll see in the record that there is a document entitled Joinder and Commitment to Unit. And it was in 1982, and John Aiken expressly executed that joinder, and the terms of that joinder say that in committing this lease and lands to the federal unit, I agree to that henceforth everything will be governed by the unit agreement that is enacted as to the Mary Aiken Federal Oil and Gas Unit. And that unit agreement is in turn another exhibit before you. It's exhibit one. And what that says is that every lease and lands that is committed to this unit will henceforth be governed by the regulations of the Bureau of Land Management, that each lease is modified to conform to federal law and the different procedures that are applicable. For example, every lease that is committed to a federal unit is automatically extended by 2 years. There are various changes that are made to the leases once they're voluntarily committed to a federal unit. So the joinder had the effect of both procedurally and substantively changing who and how would make those determinations as to property that was committed to the unit.
Okay, can you clarify something for me?
Please.
Okay, one thing I understand is that by having this joinder of commitment to the unit agreement, there may be some terms in a lease that are to be modified to conform to the agreement,
yes,
such as the example you gave.
Right.
All right, and then the next question is, what laws to be applied? Wasn't there a distinction in the unit agreement whether it was a federal lease or a lease on private land?
Well, what the federal, and you're correct that there is some distinction made. What the unit agreement says is, as to federal leases, they're subject strictly to regulations and federal law. As to non-federal lands, which would include state lands, for instance, and private lands, that the federal regulations and the Leasing Act are also adopted to the extent non-inconsistent with state law. And in this case, there's no inconsistency between what state law provides as to the substantive law versus what federal law supplies. Both of them have procedures to ensure that a lessee acts with diligence, connects wells, markets production. The way the federal model works is that the operator submits a unit plan of operation that gets approved by the manager at the BLM, and the operator is subject to directives from the BLM as to the need to produce a well or to take various actions to maintain a lease in effect. Federal law does not recognize the implied covenant to market production, and federal law has never terminated a lease, either a state lease, a private lease, or a federal lease, under the implied covenant to market. Instead, they deal with it through a much more intensive regulatory procedure whereby the BLM officers know about the lease and are taking steps to ensure that it's developed with due diligence. Now, in terms of the administrative remedy portion of our argument, I'd like to expand on that just a little bit.
Well, I'd like to ask you about your
Please.
Subject matter jurisdiction argument. If you're saying that with respect to leases on non-federal land, such as the one here, that it's that they're satisfactory as long as they're not inconsistent with state law, that doesn't sound to me that state courts would be prohibited or divested of subject matter jurisdiction in this area. Is there some authority that you have that would support your position to that effect?
Yes, really, the joinder has those two parts. One is this, which substantive law governs, and I understand the inconsistent provision that you're also alluding to, but it also says that any time you're going to expand or contract the unit to change the lands that are committed to the unit, that the exclusive procedure is to go through the Bureau of Land Management for that effect. So presumably the Bureau of Land Management would have the right, if they determine that state law was inconsistent, to take that state law into effect in making its determination whether lands or leases should be excluded.
So, and what specific provision are you relying on for that statement?
If it's okay with you, it's one of the provisions in the unit agreement. I believe it's section 18 that provides that, but hopefully I'll reserve a little time for rebuttal and I'll specifically respond to your question.
Council, I also have a question about subject matter jurisdiction. This is the third action between the parties, isn't that right? Was the subject matter jurisdiction raised in the initial action, in the original action?
I was not the counsel in that one. I think what happened is, if you go through the record, and this went up to the Court of Appeals, and you can look at their review, the trial court in Montezuma County refused to admit into evidence the unit agreement and refused to take any evidence that this lease had been committed and was part of a federal unit. I don't know in what context then the jurisdiction issue would have come up, if at all, in the earlier proceeding. I do know that when I was counsel before the Denver District Court, I did raise that, and Judge Rivera did note that I had raised jurisdictional objections and invalidated them or rejected them. But in any event, what the law is clear that subject matter jurisdiction never gets waived. It's one of those few things that the appellate court can review and can be raised at a subsequent stage. If the court doesn't have jurisdiction, any previous judgment is void anyway.
So there's never a point when a finality trumps?
Not as to subject matter jurisdiction. And in fact, I cited a case in my brief where someone was trying to apply collateral estoppel to the failure to raise subject matter jurisdiction in the past, and the Colorado Supreme Court said, no, you can't raise collateral estoppel. Subject matter jurisdiction is never waived. If the court didn't have the power to decide that controversy today, you can raise it. Okay. I think what is very important to note is we've talked about the procedure followed by the BLM. There is a current pending BLM proceeding. Well, the status of that is that at the time of trial, GDC, the plaintiff in this case, had made a request to the Bureau of Land Management to terminate the federal unit. That decision was there was a decision that was rendered by the regional office or the state office of the BLM prior to trial. What they held was that the 1982 ARCO lease was still in effect, title hadn't failed, the unit well was still part of the unit, and therefore they denied their request by GDC to terminate the federal unit. GDC at the time of the trial appealed that to the state director, and that was the status that it was before Judge Rivera. The status is essentially the same today, except there's been one other stage of proceeding. And I submitted supplemental materials to the court just to update you as to what the status of that administrative proceeding is. And I would request, and I'm not asking you to make it part of the appellate record. What I'm asking is under Rule 201 that you take judicial notice of the developments in the BLM proceeding. And what's happened is the state director, who had been appealed at the time of trial, then affirmed what the state office had done for essentially the same reasons. And now GDC has appealed that to the Interior Board of Land Appeals just a few months ago, and there's no decision that yet has been rendered. And counsel today is also counsel in that proceeding, Mr. Barber, and if I've said anything wrong, I'm sure he'll correct me.
Mr. Kimmel, what role, if any, does the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission play in this controversy?
Very little, except the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission recognizes Black Resources as operator of the well because the federal government recognizes Black Resources as operator. So one of the issues that came up at trial was that there was an entry made upon the property in response to a request by the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission that a certain test be performed on the well. So the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission follows a policy that where it's a federal unit, they'll follow whatever the BLM does. They haven't made their independent determination, but they do recognize Black Resources as the operator.
Can it make an independent decision, or must it defer to the BLM in your view?
It's the same thing. You have, when you form a federal oil and gas unit, even if there's state land involved, all parties by that joinder agree that the BLM is going to be the procedure that we're going to use to make any further determinations as to the lands and leases that are subject to the unit. If the federal unit were disbanded, then the State Oil and Gas Commission would then have jurisdiction to space it, to do other things that they would normally do. But for instance, one of the key things that the federal government does in this case is they establish a participating area for the well. There was a well that was drilled in 1982, known as the Mary Aiken Well. The federal government, the BLM, then determined that approximately 500 acres of land was the appropriate participating area for this well, and it would be the owners of that acreage that would be entitled to receive proceeds from the well and would also have to pay expenses. Only 100 acres of that 500 was contributed by John Aiken. The other 400 acres are federal acreage and some state acreage. So both the federal government and the state government claim ownership of that well in the sense that they're entitled to a portion of the proceeds. One reason why the Court of Appeals committed error, the district court committed error in this case, is that it found that GDC was the 100% owner of the well in question without requiring the BLM to make that determination as to who owned the well and who was responsible for expenses.
Let me ask you a question. You're talking about ownership of a well, and also there's, you can be an operator of a well. Can you clarify for me, being an operator of a well, is that the same thing as being a unit agreement operator?
Every oil and gas well in Colorado needs to be managed by some entity who's known as the operator. They may or may not have an ownership interest in the well. In some cases, you can have a contract operator that doesn't own the well, but usually your operator is the one that owns the largest interest in the well in terms of ownership interest. In this case, Black Resources is recognized as the unit operator in part because it succeeded to the interest of ARCO, and ARCO was the original driller and operator of this well. Another request that GDC made at trial was that the trial court order Mr. Black to execute a transfer of operator form. And the district court properly denied that request on the grounds that who operates the well is an administrative issue that is before the administrative agency and the oil and gas operator, and not something that a district court should meddle in.
Thank you.
So I guess I've lost my time. Thank you for your questions. And I do say very quickly that I think the appropriate thing is you should stay or dismiss this proceeding to allow the full BLM proceeding to take place. And further, that this court should enter a declaration that it does not currently have jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction, over the lease that was committed to the federal unit. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel Philip Barber, attorney registration 9623. And before I start, I'll compliment the court on the works of Philip Dufford. He was a partner of mine, and it's nice to see his artwork in this courtroom. I know he would have enjoyed it here. I want to start and basically frame my argument with what Mr. Kimmel identified as, I think his words were, the key fact in this case. And the key fact, as I wrote it down, was that there was a commitment of a 1982 lease to a federal oil and gas unit. That fact falls because neither of the premises are true. And that requires a little bit of the background of this case. There was a 1982 lease entered into between a Mr. John Aiken and ARCO. That 1982 lease was judicially terminated in 1998 by a jury in Montezuma County. At no time in that 1998 case where the top lessee, which is GDC had another lease that was issued by Mr. Aiken that was ready to come into effect if that 1982 lease was canceled. At no time in the litigation between Mr. Aiken and GDC on the one hand and Mr. Black on the other hand was lack of subject matter jurisdiction raised. In fact, in that proceeding, Mr. Black asserted 13 affirmative defenses and three counterclaims for damages, which did not assert a lack of jurisdiction claim.
Mr. Barber, then, yes. What is your response to Mr. Kimmel's argument that subject matter jurisdiction can be raised at any time?
I don't think the question is subject matter jurisdiction in this case to begin with. I think the question is whether a state court has the right to terminate an oil and gas lease under the laws of the state of Colorado when it's issued on state property. And so I think the failure to, the lack of subject matter jurisdiction is a peripheral issue which doesn't apply here, as shown by the fact that this court affirmed the 1998 decision of the trial court.
But subject matter jurisdiction wasn't raised in that case, was it?
Or
in that appeal?
Subject matter jurisdiction was not raised in that appeal. That's correct, Your Honor.
So as I understand Mr. Kimmel's argument, he's saying it doesn't matter if subject matter jurisdiction was never raised in Montezuma District Court or in the prior case before the Court of Appeals because there's no time limit for raising subject matter jurisdiction.
I understand that to be his argument, but I don't think this is a subject matter jurisdiction issue. In the cases we cite in our brief, I think one is the Ammer case, and I can tell you where in our brief they're cited. Pages 16 and 17 of our response brief, there's the Ammer 17 case, there's the Wolter case, and there's the Moncrief case that says that state courts have authority to adjudicate leases that are subject to federal oil and gas units.
So are you saying you agree with your counterpart's position, but you don't with regard to subject matter jurisdiction, but that you don't believe that that's what the issue is here?
I don't think it's the issue, and to be honest, Your Honor, I don't agree with it. I think at some point there has to come a time where when you've litigated a case once in the district court, once in the state court, back to the district court for a final termination, and then a second lawsuit is filed in 2000, and you appear in that case, and you adjudicate that case, that enough is enough. And it's important in both of those cases, the Bureau of Land Management was given notice of the issues. The Bureau of Land Management had witnesses appear in that 1998 case of Mr. Ryan, who came and testified as to why this lease shouldn't be terminated. And the jury terminated it, notwithstanding that testimony.
So it sounds like you believe that finality should apply, but you can't cite us any authority today to support that position?
The only case that was cited in the brief that Mr. Kimmel mentioned is the Stonewall Estates case. And that was a case where someone hadn't been given notice of a proceeding. And there was a change of a conditional water right without notice adequately given to the other water rights owners. And I think the Supreme Court in that case, in a short opinion, said where there's no notice given, the party isn't bound by it. I don't read that one case to even stand for the fact that subject matter jurisdiction can't be waived. And I don't see an explanation in this case why this court, or why the Montezuma court, or why the Denver District Court, for that reason, didn't have subject matter jurisdiction. So I guess the short answer is yes. I think at some point enough is enough, but I don't think it's a subject matter jurisdiction here. I think the state courts fully could adjudicate the rights and obligations of parties under a state lease. Which gets to the second question, was this lease, this GDC lease, this 1998 lease, ever committed to a unit? Because Mr. Kimmel's point seems to be, well, we ought to let the Bureau of Land Management decide if that lease is committed, if the 1982 lease is committed to the unit. The problem is this, the 1982 lease is dead. It's been dead for 10 years. It was terminated by this court. The 1998 lease, which Judge Rivera made a factual finding, which I believe is binding upon the court, unless there's manifest error, the 1998 lease was never committed to a federal unit. It was a lease between Mr. Aiken and Gas Development Corporation. That lease did not then become committed to the federal unit voluntarily by the lessee. And all of the provisions that Mr. Kimmel has recited here don't apply because the lease was never part of the unit. And Judge Rivera specifically found when reading the unit agreement that the unit agreement doesn't apply to leases where there is not a voluntary commitment. So I believe that finding is binding upon this court.
So, Mr. Barber, assuming everything that you said is true, what do we do then with the issue of dueling jurisdictions, if I might use that phrase, because the BLM seems like it's proceeding on a contrary course, and I'm not sure whether the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission has authority or jurisdiction to enter into this fray as well. So who determines which entity should decide the dispute here?
A lot of this is a creation of argument as opposed to the facts, and I'll tell you why we don't have dueling jurisdiction. This was a lawsuit that was filed in the state court for breach of contract, trespass, intentional interference with prospective advantage, slander of title, all classic state law claims. Mr. Black removed the case to the federal court in Colorado, alleging that it was really a federal question. Judge Krieger looked at the removal and said, there's nothing federal about this case. These are classic state law issues. Case gets remanded to the state court. Judge Rivera adjudicates the state law claims. So what we had were state law claims basically for breach of contract, trespass, et cetera. That's what this lawsuit in the Denver District Court was about. The Bureau of Land Management proceeding is about a unit that was formed in 1982 to which this lease has never been committed, the GDC lease. And what GDC asked was that the federal unit that doesn't include this lease be terminated. And that's a specific, we agree with Mr. Kimmel, that that's a specific right that the BLM has to terminate the unit, but the termination of the unit affects only those leases that are committed to the unit, and this lease is not. So we don't have that dueling jurisdiction. The BLM I think Judge Krieger has said the BLM doesn't have authority to adjudicate the state law claims that Judge Rivera has adjudicated. That's why she remanded the case to the state court.
So if I understand correctly what you're saying, the BLM proceeding is not at all inconsistent with this lawsuit.
The BLM decided not to terminate the unit. And the unit can go on with leases that are not the GDC lease if that's what the BLM decides. Yes, that's my answer, Your Honor.
Okay.
The question of operatorship has been raised here. In general, in brief, in Colorado, every well that is drilled here has to be given a permit by the State of Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. It's the state board that gives that permit. And it's the state board that authorizes and names an operator. What happened after the 1998 lawsuit, where the first lease was terminated and the GDC lease came into effect, was there were some issues of whether Mr. Black continued to trespass on the GDC lease. That case was resolved with a stipulation where Mr. Black agreed never to come on this lease again for any purpose, I think was the language. Once it was felt that he was coming on the lease, the lawsuit was filed in Denver District Court, and one of the remedies that was requested was for Mr. Black to sign a paper with the Colorado Oil and Gas Commission that transferred operatorship of this well that was on a purely private lease, now owned by GDC, to GDC. Judge Rivera said she would not do that because she thought the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission had the authority to adjudicate disputes between dueling operators, not necessarily dueling proceedings, but dueling operators. The only statute, the only rule that Mr. Kimmel was able to cite was a provision in a, it was 34 CRS 3460.122.5C as the regulation that Mr. Kimmel says allows the commission to make that decision about who should be an operator. Well, that citation is to an environmental response fund. It's not to anything in the commission rules, which allows the commission to look at a proceeding where you have divested a party from a lease and decide who should be the operator.
Well, Mr. Barber, let me ask you, so you just said that the COGCC authorizes and names operators.
Yes, ma'am.
What is the regulation or what is the authority that grants them that authority?
So it's CRS 3460101 et sec. Every well in the state of Colorado has an operator named by the commission. And we asked Judge Rivera to order Black, who now does not have a right to come on the lease, does not own any interest in the lease, to file a change of operator form so that the present lessee can operate the well. Otherwise, the well will just sit there without an operator.
Could the state commission name an operator without that form?
Yes, with an order. Well, I can. This is not in the record. We were told that the state needed a change of operator form. And without the change of operator form, they were unwilling to act because they don't want to get in the middle of this fight. That's why we asked Judge Rivera to enter an order requiring the change of operator form to be signed and filed with the commission so that this well could be operated.
So if I understand again what you're saying now, that the question of having the change of operator form effectuated must be done by a state court rather than by the COGCC?
The COGCC will administratively change the operator if it has a change of operator form. But because Black refuses to execute that form, COGCC will not act.
So that wasn't taken care of in the stipulation reached by the parties?
It was not, Your Honor. It was not, Your Honor. And our contention was that was part of the reasonable expectations of the parties and that the court should have enforced the duty of good faith and fair dealing to require that, since Mr. Black doesn't even have the right to come on the property anymore.
So it was left open then and it's still left open now, is that?
That's essentially how Judge Rivera resolved the case. She refused to enter an order, and that was part of our cross appeal.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. So although you and Mr. Kimmel have different perspectives, you both seem to think that the COGCC has little or no authority here. And he said, Mr. Kimmel says it's the BLM that has all the authority, and you're saying it's the state courts have the authority to determine the operator or...
Well, I don't think the BLM has the authority to order the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission to do anything.
Okay.
I think only a court of this state can enter an order requiring either the commission directly to make that change or requiring someone to execute a change of operator form.
Along that line, then, is there a distinction between a unit operator for the unit agreement and an operator of a well?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. A unit can only exist if a lease is committed to the unit. What we have now is a lease that is outside the unit that has a well on it that needs to be operated. It's a purely private lease, a purely private well, which is why we need the commission to enter an order allowing GDC to operate that well. If there's really a jurisdictional issue, it's that the lease is outside of the federal bureau's jurisdiction because it's not part of a unit. This is purely a state lease matter now. All right. Any further questions? If not, I'll ask the court to basically uphold the trial court's ruling with the exception that it order that Black execute a change of operator form so that this well can be operated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.